Indian SDRs are extremely talented because they have literally a few seconds to make an impression on the phone call, right? A background to this is again the amount of spam calls that we get in India.
Podcast that helps you open and thrive in foreign markets. This is Steve, your favorite host speaking, and I hope you're ready, all buckled up, because today we are traveling all the way to India. Almost 3.3 million of square kilometers, 1.4 billion of inhabitants. This is a country with huge business potential, but really hard to break into, especially if you cannot understand the culture there. Well, today I'm welcoming Shashir, who is sharing his experience of launching the Indian market for three different companies. He takes the time to explain a little bit of India's history for us to understand how it impacts the way you choose your lead acquisition channels there, the way you negotiate, the way you talk about contracts, etc. Be ready for an hour packed with insight about this incredible culture and how to do business there. Hi, Shashir. So happy to welcome you here on the International Corner podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good, Yvonne. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yes, my pleasure. And I'm very excited because actually I think you're based in India, right?
I am, correct. It's a city down south of India called Bangalore. We locally call it Bengaluru. Yeah, one way or the other, that's where I come from.
This is so amazing. And I'm very excited because this episode is going to be about India, how to launch this market, getting a little bit of some lesson learned from your past experience. But perhaps before digging into this, could you start by introducing yourself to the audience? Give us a little bit more, some background about what is it that you did in your last company. We can't, unfortunately, mention it, but your experience was so rich.
Sure. Thanks, Stefan. So I am basically an engineer and a management graduate, a sales professional by profession. After having done a bit of engineering work as part of my initial part of the career, I moved into business, got my MBA from a university in France, moved into the SaaS world, software as a service, and ever since I've been working with SMBs, enterprise market, resellers and white labeling partners to sell various different SaaS platforms in multiple markets, of which I'm most proud of our experience with the India market and a bit of America, Europe as well. But on the whole, across my career, I've been fortunate to have the experience of working with Australia, New Zealand, all the way to the United States, barring some Spanish-speaking countries because I don't speak Spanish one bit. Rest of the other countries where English is something that can be used for business, yeah, we have had some footing there. So, as part of the last few things, we helped a few European companies try and launch their services and offerings here in India. Just before that, we had the experience of doing it the other way around, helping Indian companies launch in Europe and many other countries. And I'm really happy to see that my next project will be launching an Indian-Australian company in Africa and the Middle East. So yeah, multiple markets, multiple locations. Yeah, really happy about it.
This is amazing. And I think that's why it would be very insightful to dig into what you did, the differences that you saw in between markets, and perhaps tell us a little bit the stories about your last gig, I would say, opening the Indian market. Before this, there's this new concept that I've introduced during this season two that's called the icebreaker. Just imagine that you have a dice, right, with six numbers. Could you just pick one of them? I'm going to ask you a question and you know, just answer it to the best of your ability, I guess.
Interesting. I pick three.
Number three. All right. What is the toughest moment or the toughest period you had to go through this year in your job regarding global expansion? I mean, last year now, right? But
okay. So a bit of a background before I answer this question. In India, our financial year is a little different from the rest of the world. Our financial year starts from the 1st of April and the financial year ends on the last day of March. So it's April to March. Now for us in our sales cycle, as you might know, the initial part of the year is when budgets get allocated. The toughest part for us was the time between December and March, when even though there is intent to buy something, right, and this is across the offering, the plethora of offerings that we offer here in India, not just with us, between December and March, there is a lot of inhibition from the customers to invest on new things. One, they're looking at a new set of budgetary requirements for the next year in a few months. Two, their own offerings and services are in a seasonal period. For example, although India predominantly is Hindu, we celebrate Christmas, we celebrate the Georgian New Year with a lot of fervor. So a lot of sale, a lot of offers, and all of these things happen then. When companies are working on their own offerings, everyone from the marketing teams, from IT departments are all busy in making sure that works and functions properly. And they don't really have the time to give us for us to pitch, prospect, close deals and all of that. So this last quarter for us, which happens to be the first quarter of the Georgian calendar, is generally tough. And last year, it was specifically tougher than most year because a lot of uncertainties in the market. We were opening up just after COVID. Okay, let's not even talk about the toughest period on the whole because that was COVID. If we were to discount that part, the first 3 months of last year when things were actually opening up, there was business happening, but there was a lot of inhibition among the customers and their customers as well in terms of opening up their purse and start spending like how they used to before. So that for us as a team was probably the toughest moments. And incidentally, that was also during, it was also during this time that we started thinking about the market and the success of the market for us. So a lot of tough conversations, a lot of tough decisions were made during this period. So by far, I think this has been the toughest period. To sum it up, the first quarter of the Georgian year, January, February, and March, and the last quarter of our Indian financial year was the toughest, for sure.
But very tough. All right. Thanks for sharing this. I'm trying to ask those icebreakers question also to share difficult moments, difficulties that are in our jobs when we work into global expansions, because it's tougher, right? It's tougher than when it's a mature market. So thanks a lot. I know that we can't really disclose the company's name you've recently worked for, but just for our listeners to understand a little bit more what you're going to talk about afterwards, could you give us some background into, I would say, the type of solution it is, if it was a SaaS, if it was like the type of target audience, if it was rather like B2C, B2B, the sales cycle lens, just to give us a little bit of insight so we can understand after the choices you've made or and all information you're going to share.
Absolutely. To give a background to your listeners, Stephen, it's you're going to talk about two specific experiences on our side, both being European companies trying to function out of India, open up business in India, and a little bit about some experiences from American companies trying to open up in India. So,
perfect.
Three companies in total, if I can steal some ideas from all the experiences that we've had. Now, the background to the nature of the business, luckily for us, remains the same. What I mean by that is all three are SaaS companies, B2B in nature, subscription-based in terms of financial model, a little different from each other in terms of realizing revenue and things like that. We will talk about it in a bit. And all three of them into marketing. So marketing firms, SaaS platforms with B2B business model based on subscriptions.
And what about the target audience? Is it completely different, or was it more, I don't know, enterprise, mid-market, SMBs?
This part, there is a difference indeed. While some of these experiences have specific target to enterprise only, and the definition of what an enterprise is can be different, but to keep it simple, our main target was indeed enterprise in all three.
Okay.
But in some of these cases, we also have a bit of SMBs and resellers partnerships that come into the foray. Our teams handled these as well in various different markets. But to be specific to India, enterprise partners and SMBs in that order.
Okay. Enterprise. Okay. So if we try to get the essence of what you've done in each cases, was it strictly country launching, or were there some of the experiences that it was more focused on the more mature side of the expansion project?
Right. While in the first case it was mostly mature, the other two cases were quite strictly opening countries. We need to understand one other thing. Now, before any company opens any other market that they're not familiar with, at least in my case, all three of them had tried opening or doing business in India from Europe and America, right? So they saw potential, they saw the need, they saw the fact that people want a service like this. So the product market fit, in essence, was somewhat established in all three of them. And just to reiterate, in the first one, it was as though we come in and lead an existing team towards better success. But in the other two cases, it was like become the first employee and work towards building a team of salespeople, going to general management and take care of the complete geography, so to speak, from the scratch. So that's been the essence of the experience in all three cases.
All right. And you touched upon something interesting. One fact, trying to launch India remotely, did it work? You seemed to say that in the first experience, there was some business that was done remotely.
So, the question that you asked is a very interesting one purely because of the experience that we have had, right? Now, how we define opening a country will answer this question. While on the first instance, doing some business profitably in this country was the definition of opening a market. In the latter cases, however, it's not just being profitable, being sustainably profitable, point number one. Point number two, making sure that we become a, like how we call it, a household name, right? When we talk about a CRM, Salesforce comes up on top. Something similar to that, how do we become anonymous to a concept? So this marketing concept that we're talking about, if that is mentioned, how does our brand name become the top of the list, the go-to name? So that was the definition of opening the market. While in the former case, yes, I can say that we were successful opening the country remotely. On the latter cases, though, no, we weren't successful opening the country remotely. And also, we cannot discount the fact that the management had many different ideas of how to function and operate in a market. So, foot on the street sort of a model, right? Foot on the street is having a local office, having local people service the customers. It also depends widely on the market itself, for sure, but also the offering, right? So we have multiple American companies that does not have office, that do not have office in India, but still are functioning really, really well. Similarly, we have multiple other, we call this multinational companies, right? Companies with multiple offices in multiple different nations. So these MNCs have functioned in India without having an office for a very, very long time. So by definition, it was extremely important for us to understand the strategy of the founders, the investors, the way they want to take it forward. And ultimately, it becomes a number game. How fast do we want to expand and succeed in terms of the definitions, the KPIs that we have, versus the sustainability of a business. So again, the former case, yes, we were successful opening it remotely. The latter, not so much.
All right. And to be even more precise, I would say on that side, for companies that might be looking at getting into India remotely, what advice would you give them? And is that a route they should actually explore?
Very frankly, I think that has to be the default route to follow. Because if we don't already have clients to speak about, if we don't already have some level of market knowledge in the sense that we are there, we are doing business with a few people, we understand the nitty-gritties of what the clients need, I don't think opening a country will be successful. So I think it's become more of a norm than anything else. I think no company would actually want to try things unless the nature of that service actually needs, for instance, logistics. You have to be in the country to get things done. But any other SaaS platform, I don't really think anyone actually now thinks about opening an office first. Now, I'm not talking about registered offices. I'm talking about operational offices. Mm-hmm. Now, my country, to some extent, demands companies to have a registered office in the country to be able to operate. That doesn't mean that they have people in this office, right? It's just a registered address. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about registered plus operational offices. I strongly feel trying out a market remotely, especially post-COVID when things can happen remotely, I think should be the first thing to do, just like we did it in all three cases, actually. I think it's the first best thing to do. Understand, test the waters before you dive in, as long as you can. So yeah, that's going to be my strongest advice, to test out the market remotely. Try and see if you can hire one person there to help you out with local stuff, marketing efforts and things like that. But the sales and all that can still happen remotely if one can afford the time difference.
All right. And how, this is actually interesting what you're saying, because I've been having a few debates on my own with India. India being, you know, a culture that's very different from what we know in EMEA or in North America. And a lot of conversations that I've had, I think people were saying that it's very important to have someone on the ground, but most importantly, to have someone from the culture. So that's who is actually Indian. So would you say that then if companies are in trying to get into India, they have to have someone from the country, even if it's remotely, but have someone from the culture itself? Or can it be any, like me, for instance, or right, like, or any other like European person that could contemplate selling something remotely from Europe to India?
So in order to clarify this, what I mean by starting operations in a country remotely is not to have heavy investments in a country from the first day itself. I still said, and I strongly believe, someone with a foot on the ground, just what's one person to help you out with, should be a very good start. That, so far as the clarification goes. Now, to come to your question, yes, I agree on the other speakers, with the other speakers in the first part when they say it's culturally complex. It's just not culturally difficult. It's culturally complex because of the history that this country has had. You need to understand that it's an amalgamation of multiple cultures put into one, given one name called India that functions very differently in various different parts of the country. Everything said and done with the most sensitive non-Indian. When I say that very carefully. What I mean by that is someone who understands the culture. I'm not talking about an Indian born in India, an Indian citizen. That's not what I mean. What I mean is someone who is culturally sensitive about India. So as long as that is absent, it's going to be extremely hard to function in India. Because we're a very collective group of people, and we're not very direct, you know what I mean? So we beat around the bush to come to the point and answer a simple question, because we take offense and we think that we are meaning offense very quickly. That's somehow how we've been brought up. Things are very different in different parts of the country. You need to keep that in mind. I'm generalizing a lot of stuff which may not probably work in the most posh part of Mumbai, but might still work in 80% of the rest of the 80% of the country. With that declaration, what I mean by what I'm saying is understanding what the person means when he or she says something, because reading between the lines and all these things have to come naturally, and it comes naturally to us, right? So that part of cultural sensitivity, as long as that's there, having someone with that level of cultural sensitivity is extremely, extremely important to succeed in India. That's for sure.
All right. So as long as you have someone that's culturally aware, it's possible to try and doing it remotely. Got it. The something I wanted to go back to, you said that was interesting, is how different parts of India can be. And I think it's a little bit in the same sense, and even probably stronger than my experience on the US market, where if you try to sell it to the East Coast, it's probably going to be different than if you try to sell it to Texas, for instance, etc. What or how would you advise listeners to go about targeting India? Should they start by a specific region, a specific city, Mumbai, for instance? Like, what would be your advice on that?
Okay. Where to start? Very good question. In all three cases, where we started, very simply put, is where our customers are, right? In the latest case, we were targeting retail. In the first case, we were targeting technology companies, which basically meant, on the first case, we were opening in Bangalore, my home city. Mm-hmm. In the last case, we were opening up with Mumbai as our base, because that's the financial capital of the country. That's where a lot of headquarters are for all the retail companies. that's where companies coming into India as a joint venture, foreign companies, I mean, which come into India as a joint venture, they open up company their headquarters there. So it was pretty obvious for us to start where the customers are. And that is what we should all do, I guess. Now, it also gets split when it comes to what kind of operations we are trying to open up in a country. In the second instance, we wanted our tech team, a part of the tech team, to be in India as well. So we not only opened one office, we opened two offices, one for tech, the other for sales. The salespeople were stationed in a different city, close to where the customers are, so that they can hop onto a cab, hop onto a train, go meet them and come back with hopefully a deal. But the other city had a tech office because that's where the tech talent was all spread out. So it depends on what kind of operations we are trying to set up. But if we have to limit it to sales, then yes, be where your customers are.
All right, perfect. Very clear. Maybe let's talk about reaching out, lead acquisition. Same here. What have you learned from your experience? Like, what's the best way to approach India? Obviously, if we're talking the fact that it was mainly focused on enterprise, to give back some context, but what's your experience in that? Like, how should we go about reaching out to Indian companies?
This is where the market culturally gets super complex, right?
Okay.
The general strategies like email marketing, SMS marketing, events, they all hold good in India as well, but they have their own challenges. Let's try and address one by one, if possible. The first one, the most popular one, email marketing, does not really work in a country like India because we get spammed a ton every day, so we hardly open our emails. The opening rate on marketing emails is about 2 or 6%. It varies between 2 to 6%, and any company working with 2 to 6% opening rate on their marketing emails will know that it's a dead investment. But still, we do it because everyone is doing this. We don't want to miss the bandwagon. We jump on the bandwagon. We still continue to do this. The conversions are hilariously low. Then
yeah,
comes...
I can imagine.
Right. Then comes the strategy of calling. Now, this is where our SDRs are extremely talented, right? They get talented because the market is so challenging. Now, one of the most, at least in my opinion, the Indian SDRs are extremely talented because they have literally a few seconds to make an impression on the phone call, right? A background to this is, again, the amount of spam calls that we get in India with banks selling loans, credit cards, insurance, fundraising. We don't really have a rule to protect our contact database in India. We don't have an equivalent of the GDPR, which probably is the best data protection rules and regulations. We don't have a version of that. Our governments are still working on getting a rule like that. But even if you were to get a rule like that, let's be honest about it, implementation of that rule and execution of that rule is extremely hard. I wouldn't say impossible, but super hard. Right. So which means that my phone numbers, my email addresses are everywhere.
Okay.
Every senior person in every company has two phones, one for personal and one for spams. We don't call them professional. We call them spams. Right. Only my wife and my children will have my personal phone number. Everyone else will have the other ones. No banks will have this phone number. No insurance companies will have this phone number, which brings us to the point that if we were to make cold calls, which still are the best way to reach out to people here in India, the amount of time that we have as an SDR to make an impression is less than 10 seconds. Hello, how are you? Can I have 2 minutes? That sort of a start gives you nothing. You have to be extremely sharp and make sure that that you convey your message in the first 10 seconds as effectively as possible, which I think is the best working strategy for us in India. There are others like account-based marketing, for instance, on platforms like LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. But in all three cases, because our typical persona were marketing people, they really knew that they were being targeted, right? So they didn't really click on these ads to give us inbound leads. But in one way or the other, we know that there are impressions that are being gathered. And because they are marketing people, they understand and appreciate the fact that they are being targeted, because that's what they do as well for their own companies. So that way, it's easier for us to bond over, right? So you started with an ice-breaking with one question. Our ice-breaking can be an entire 45 minutes and still the ice may not be broken. It can take him 45 seconds sometimes to break the ice, and then we say, come on, let's get to business. Let's do it the European way of doing it. Let's talk business. So multiple channels.
I was just curious to dig a little bit into this because it's interesting. You mentioned cold calling as one of the best channels to source leads. You talked about those openings and how efficient, how sharp you need to be in those first like 10 to 15 seconds. Do you actually have an example to give us? Obviously, it relates to one of your companies that you mentioned, but did you figure out like some good ways of having this like 15 seconds focus at the beginning to try to get them interested and get a next step?
Absolutely. There are quite a few actually. They all come from some of our super talented SDRs. Now, in one case, we are trying to solve a specific problem for a specific company. Yeah, it's a bank. Now, the banks are the ones that spam us a lot. But when we try to contact the banks, they just don't respond. Right.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So the first thing that this guy did was he obviously had the mobile phone number of the prospect. The first 2 seconds were, I will tell you who I am, but I've sent you a WhatsApp message. Can you please check that out first? So whoever you think the person is, scammer, spammer, a close friend putting a prank, someone, your boss, your friend, whoever it is that you think this person is, you invariably look at the WhatsApp message, right?
Oh, okay.
So this
next
person
one.
Ends up looking at the message, and that had a report of the audit that we had done on that company, showing a very important but a very basic mistake that they had done in their marketing presence on the internet.
Uh-huh.
So that's basically how he opened up. This is after multiple attempts, right? Multiple attempts to try and pitch the service, doing it politely, doing it through normal ways of communication. This definitely is not normal. Who calls and says, I've sent you a WhatsApp message, look at it, right?
Of course,
you
which is
out.
Why it works. Of course, which is why it works.
Which is exactly why it worked. So, but you got to be extremely careful, right? This person was the CMO. And something that I told you initially as part of our conversation, ours is a culture which can get offended very quickly.
Mm.
This person was a 20-year-old guy, and the CMO was 50 plus, and someone so young pulling a prank on you like this, or at least a perceived prank. It's not a direct respectful conversation. No way is it considered as a respectful conversation. So he would have lost the deal completely and never gotten a response. It's also calibrating your customer in such a way that your prospect rather, to make sure you can do such things, right? Otherwise you have to follow the normal channels, keep at it, and it'll work one day. But trying these things out, yeah, you gotta be extremely careful. because we can get offended very, very quickly. And in this case, it would have been an age thing, a younger one trying to do something like this on an older person, which is extremely important here in India. So yeah, I mean, that's still the first thing that came to my mind is this, and that's okay. Why I shared.
Amazing.
Still happens to be very funny.
It is funny, and I think now it's about like how you can find the best way to stand apart from all the other cold callers, right? So I think it was a good example. Did you have any other channels in mind that worked well over there to open the Indian market besides cold calling? Obviously, part of a multi-channel strategy, as you mentioned, but still cold calling is still working well there.
Cold calling indeed works well, assuming you do certain things right. But one thing that really helped us was something that we hadn't tried a lot before. The background to this is, like how I said some time back, the strategies with the leadership is extremely important. And I, as a person, was very uncomfortable using WhatsApp for business. I would not like it when someone approached me on WhatsApp for business. But this is my, I don't want to reveal my age, but my old generation thoughts, right? But when I came back from Europe, is when I realized that WhatsApp had become this new quick way of business communication. We tried using WhatsApp for our outreach. One of the things that we tried doing was shoot under 1 minute videos with two or three important things. One, who we are. Two, why we are reaching out. And three, where you can find our details. No solutions, no pitch as such, no selling. We just said who we are, why we are reaching out. This why we are reaching out part is something that we focused on for 30 seconds. We used to do an audit of their marketing spends, marketing efficacy and all of that, and say, this is what you're doing well, this is what you're doing okay, and this is where you really need help, and that's where we come in, basically. And just send them one video on WhatsApp. They would watch the video, set up a meeting booked, conversions happen. So with the multi-channel approach, the leadership leaving their thoughts about not using WhatsApp for communication, making sure the younger ones are listened to, we just give them a free hand and said, okay, do what you want as long as you don't offend anyone, and be cautious about the communication that's being sent out to you. If someone says don't reach out on WhatsApp, make sure you don't. But ultimately, it's something that really worked. I think at some point we were even recording the conversions, and I think it was somewhere about 60-65% of conversions into meetings only, right?
Okay, meetings only. And question on that, did you send those videos through WhatsApp? Because you mentioned that emails were not really working in terms of opening rates, so...
Emails were useless, Steph. They were just useless. Mm-hmm. So it was mostly... We just wanted to pivot and see where we can get these people's attention, right? We didn't have a lot of marketing spends. We couldn't run ads on Google. We couldn't do much on these digital assets of ours. They were still working in the other geos, but specific to India, we just wanted to make sure that we remain profitable and not spend and leak out a lot of our funding. So it was mostly those reasons why we tried WhatsApp. And also, we listened to our customers to some extent. When we gave them a cold call, they said, send me your details on WhatsApp multiple times. That's when we actually realized that the clients are open to using WhatsApp for communication for business. Why shouldn't we, right? WhatsApp for sure gets opened. They are asking for it, so they will open it. So why not? So that was our time of realization of sorts, mostly coming from our own inhibitions, not using WhatsApp for communication in Europe. We come back here and things have changed and we start using WhatsApp for communication in India. So it was mostly that. And yeah, emails, like I said, 2%, 6%, it's nothing.
So does that mean that most of clients that you signed or most of the pipeline that you generated in your three past experiences were coming from outbound?
Yes, apart from the first one, the second and the third instances were mostly outbound. The first one, luckily, we had some name in other countries, and because of the global nature of Google Ads, especially the kind of expenditure that we had done, we were also coming up naturally as part of the ad search. We were coming up on top, so we had quite a few inbound leads, but mostly our teams were focused on outbound strategies.
All right. Yeah, right. Which also made sense because you were targeting enterprise customers, right? So because it's, I'm guessing, like bigger average deal size, it also makes sense to have and focus on outbound.
Absolutely. So it's effort versus gain, basically. So the amount of effort versus the gains that we get, we definitely had to focus on our strategies.
All right. Clear. A point that I wanted to come back to prior to this conversation, we had a chat, very interesting when you mentioned that call centers and externalizing basically everything related to sales was very successful and very powerful and present in India. My question is, would you advise companies to do it at the early days, or would it be preferable to keep it internal? And also, just because it's also the point of having conversation with international expansion people, why is that a trend over there in India to externalize this kind of services, sales actions?
One of the biggest things that led to us declaring that we kind of failed in India was a concept of how we Indians want to be served. Now, all the SaaS companies are built on one basic principle. At least, we talk about one basic principle, which is we build a SaaS platform to help you do things yourself, right? But here in India, the culture is, there are certain things that I won't get done, which is, do it for me. I don't care if you use a SaaS model, I don't care if you do it manually, but I want something done, please help me do that, right? So this is a major difference when it comes to how the market perceives certain things. If you go back a few years, few decades actually, India became what it is because of software being exported, telesales happening from India, call centers being established in India. That's how India became the IT center of Asia, the capital of Asia, right? We are a very service-oriented kind of community. So we like servicing people. Now, with that sort of a cultural background, sales in general, so a bit of a background here as well. I also run another company which is basically into sales and business development training, helping companies set up a process to begin with. And all of these methodologies that come from the West are something that is being figured out now from a process standpoint. Now, we have communities in India which have been doing business since ages, right? Even the kids that get born into these communities learn business from a very young age. So you can't talk methodologies to them. It comes naturally to them. And also to come back to the main question, which is outsourcing sales itself, is something very, very rampant in India because one, there is help that is available. I don't have to build everything from the scratch. We have salespeople, we have We have agencies which give out salespeople, especially with FMCG, non-tech related products, right? But the approach with tech is a little different in my opinion, because for me, if I'm talking to a tech company, a salesperson from a tech company, my biggest turnoff is when the salesperson says, for basic things, right? I don't know the answer to this question. Let me bring my tech person to the next call. Mm-hmm. That to me is the biggest turnoff. So for me, as long as it's not very tech heavy, outsourcing your sales force may make sense initially to get the ball rolling, because okay, these guys are trained on sales methodologies. They already know how to build a sales pipeline. You don't have to recruit and start from the beginning. Your cash flow can be something, sometimes something that you want to protect. So you don't want people on your roll and things like that. So in simple terms, non-tech, I'm fine with the strategy of outsourcing sales.
All right.
But tech, no, I'm more against than ever before in having right, that outsourced, because your people really have to understand the technology before they sell.
It totally makes sense. And also it's interesting to have this cultural background. Thanks for sharing it, because it's, to me, I think what comes to mind is that in terms of how you will service your customer afterwards, how you will support them, having a dedicated person, it's going to be very important as well, probably in the choice of, for the choice of the Indian company to say yes.
One other thing, first of all, yes, you summarized it really well. One other challenge for us is Indian customers would want the first person that they spoke to, if the sale has gone through, right? They want the salesperson to be their key account manager also, which is not really possible. But yeah, you summarized it really well. It really depends on the nature of our business. But as long as it's tech driven, yeah, have people who understand the value of your technology and be able to sell that effectively.
All right. And I would say, last question before we move to the last section of every episode. From what you went through, the different experiences, you had some failures, some of the market openings didn't work. What did you learn from it? And what can you share with us that we should keep in mind if we want to successfully launch the Indian markets, really, you know, aspects that are really proper to the Indian culture that any non, I would say, Indian company should have in mind if they want to successfully launch here?
Timing. I steal this answer from my from one of my managers before. He always used to say, do not hesitate to try things, but pivot very quickly. That's where the timing part comes in. It's okay to fail. It's a very dynamic market. What worked in 2020 may not work in 2021, because the general dynamism of the market has changed completely, right? So as long as we are open to try new things, pivot quickly when they fail, and take decisions quickly, I believe we can succeed. It's a market which will give you multiple failures, right? Before this recording, we were talking about how we as a culture are much more comfortable talking about failure when we have some part of success to just say we are not a complete failure, than like how we are talking now just after a failure. To be able to do that, you're going to see multiple failures, irrespective of where you come from, what your culture is, understanding this culture. Like I said, right, when we got our independence, a bit of trivia about India, which I think you'll be able to appreciate, and your listeners too, 545 princely states. It's like, imagine this as 545 different European countries, mm-hmm, most of them speaking their own language. We have 22 official languages. None of them qualify as one national language. If we meet two people from different cultures and different regions, we switch to English. English in India has been around for 200 years only, while the other languages have been in India for 2000 years, right? So what I'm trying to come to is the kind of people that you deal with and the perception, the intended lines of communication, unintended lines of communication, are all the things that you need to catch very quickly and tweak your approach to make sure that you succeed. You will falter. There will be failures along the way, multiple failures along the way. That's guaranteed. And that's why I cannot stress more on the timing. Talking in terms of ROI, everything is about ROI. Mm-hmm. If I invest $1 million today, will I be able to earn at least $1 million, if not more, in 1 year's time? If I can earn at least $1 million, I will invest in this. Otherwise, I will not.
Very clear. And maybe like one aspect you mentioned that I found very interesting that was part of your learning. If I recall on your last experience, when you guys didn't manage to, to completely break into the Indian market, you said the relation of India, the rapport to commitment with contract lengths and how it's hard to get them from day one involved into a 1 year to your contract.
Yeah. Yes, we did discuss about this. I went silent because all the memories came back to me about the kind of negotiations we had with our customers about contracts. Mm. Now, India, like countries in South America, for instance, Brazil, for instance, other Asian countries like the Middle East, we base a lot of trust on words. Right, the concept of contract is relatively new in business, in Indian business. Although all the contracts exist in the market, they are placeholders only. They are a cushion for big companies to protect their funding. Now imagine a small company opening its operations in India. You create a contract. I'm just talking to you about the value of the contract itself, right? You would like to have a contract. The contract protects you. The contract protects the customer. Now, a hypothetical situation. Tomorrow, the customer says, I'm not going to pay you. As an operator, as a vendor, I don't have the resources to go behind these people to get my money when I very well know that they're not going to be my customer. They're my first few customers. My focus is on preserving these customers and continue serving them whether or not they pay, right? This is the kind of approach that many companies take with India. Some of the companies that I worked for which wanted to open up in India did not see that as a right fit, that as a way to do business in India, which I truly respect. Why should we, right? To some extent. But we are used to such things. We are used to demanding a lot of things. Here, customer is the king. We say yes to a lot of things that the customer says, go back to the drawing board and try and see if we can do things. One of those is contract. When you can't enforce a contract, and let's say there's a big company, Company A, and I'm servicing Company A. They say, okay, we're not happy with you. We're going to stop paying you, which is against contractual terms. They have to pay me for at least 1 year. Now, as a company, if this is a big company, if I sue them, the word will go in the market that our company sued Company A and every other company will know about this rather than the good things that we have done. We will all focus on why we were not able to serve Company A. Whether Company A is actually happy or unhappy is a different question altogether. Mm-hmm. They could just be protecting their money and saying, we're not happy with you. Right? So I can't afford to go behind them and put resources and get my money from one customer and lose 10 more customers. Mm-hmm. So the value of a contract And this is very well understood by the customer also. So with a drop of a hat, they will say, I quit. Right? So this diminishes the value of a contract completely. And respectful prospects will ask for monthly contracts, free trials, POCs, and things like that, which was not something that we could do as part of our business model. So this is one, the general aversion to contract itself, and also the enforceability of a contract when a contract exists, thus bringing the whole value of the contract itself down to nothing. So a contract is there only as a document for us to start working together. But apart from that, in many cases, unless you're a Salesforce or Microsoft, the contract actually does not have a lot of value. I'm not saying Indians don't honor contractual terms. It's just that the perceived value of a contract as opposed to the perceived value of a relationship, in comparison, contract has nothing.
All right. Very clear. So I'm going to try to sum up very quickly several things you said today, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and then we'll move to the last section of the podcast. But talking about launching the Indian market, you mentioned several points. One is when you look at, I would say, India from a perspective of actually getting there, your advice is to start with someone that's culturally aware of what's going on there. It doesn't have to be that's an actual Indian raised and born there, but someone that's really like culturally aware. Second is try to target a geography that makes sense regarding your customer base. How is it looking like right now? So if you're looking at technology, etc., you know, go to Mumbai because it's the financial, you know, like the city, like part of the country, and maybe others depending on really what you want to target. Try to keep your sales force internal, especially if it's tech related. If it's maybe other industries, like look for it, but having something very technical where you have to be experts, it's better to have it in-house. Then really try to be careful to several aspects, meaning like timing. That's very critical for that. So timing regarding how dynamic is the market, when they take decisions, maybe even like from the example you gave at the beginning with those like 3 months where they are looking at budgets, you know that it's going to be tighter. So, but timing was key for you. ROI, make everything about how they can get their investment out of what they're going to invest for your solution. And you also mentioned that customer is king. That means that in terms of negotiation, you're going to have to probably make some room and unfortunately like try to maybe have like a markup to be sure that you get where you want to go. And obviously commitments, it doesn't mean anything when we talk about contract. What they pay attention to is really relationship, how they're going to be in relationship, and the contract is really just a mean. So you have to expect that they're going to ask for monthly contract, free trial. You have to be ready, but that's, I think, like what you mentioned. And maybe one last thing that I forgot, if there were a few channels you would suggest to use, especially when we talk about enterprise or big size deals, are cold calling, WhatsApp. Obviously, like you can keep doing other channels, but these were the ones that you felt are working the most.
Wow, beautifully summarized.
All right.
Very well summarized. Thank you.
Perfect. Yeah.
I'm speechless.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And last part of every episode is the Oops, My Bad time.
Whoops, my bad.
For those who tune in for the first time, it's a few minutes at the end of each episode where the guest shares one mistake or one setback that has happened during the country launching mission so that everyone can learn from it. So you've already shared a few, but maybe one specifically that you could share to wrap up this episode?
Recruitment. You have to be extremely, extremely cautious about the first few hires that you get. Because country opening, the biggest task for any country opener is, after the sales part itself, is hiring, training, and getting other people ready. If you make mistakes as part of the first few hires, the entire culture goes for a toss. The entire dynamic of the team goes for a toss. So one of my managers would always say, I don't think I agree to that 100%, but in principle, I agree to it. Is try to hire people who are like you mostly, so that you don't have to have quarrels and fights and misfits on basic things. You agree on basic things and you can focus on business where you actually need to have conversations.
You have it wrong? Like, did you make a mistake on that? Did you actually like mishired one or a few times?
We did. These are the ones that we had to let go as well.
Okay.
And it's a reflection of the leadership, right? There's no one else to be blamed apart from the country's leadership. That's where the buck stops. So it's my personal faltering as well, although there were leads and other things. No, it's always the leadership's mistake, because that's the final person that the person meets, and you have the power to say no. You have to take your time. What I mean, just to elaborate on these things, especially post-COVID, I don't want to hire anyone completely remotely anymore. What I mean by that is they can work remotely, but you got to meet with them. You got to have a lunch date, as in a professional lunch date with them, just to see how these people are outside of the interview pressure, outside of that 1 hour of focused attention that they give you as part of an interview. So again, it all goes back to timing, because it's easy in hindsight to say these were mistakes that we had to do better things on. But while we were doing these things, naturally, yes, you won't have a lot of time to be able to do all of these things really well. But keep in mind, this company pays you for exactly these things that need to be done, right? There's no other way. You have to give enough time to each of these things. So timing is extremely, extremely important. I don't know, maybe I've spoken about it some 30 times on this podcast already.
Yeah.
That I think any problem that you talk about in all these three cases, Steph, I will be able to relate it to timing, which I'm convinced now that I think timing is the biggest mistake that I have done on cases like these, where I have been a failure in opening India as a market for various different companies, irrespective of how good the team is and all of that, right? Yeah, it's been a failure, and some of them have been really close to my heart personally, almost like a child. And the worst feeling is to close down a market. That's the worst feeling ever.
I feel you on that one. And thank you so much, Ishir, for sharing so much in this podcast today. It's actually longer than the ones I usually do, but I was expecting it because it's just so different. Like the culture, it's really different, and I was just genuinely excited to learn about it. So thanks a lot for everything that you shared, and I guess just have to tell you until next time now.
So long, until next time. Thanks a lot for having me, Tiff. It was a great pleasure, great pleasure. What am I saying? It was a great pleasure to be able to talk to you today. Different parts of the world, we are connected by one big thing, sales. So to all the people who are into sales out there, more power to you. Stay motivated. I know that's the biggest problem for all of us.
We all
feel you. We hope the motivation never ends. So yeah, on that closing note, so long, until next time.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You too.
Thank you so much for listening until the end. If you liked this episode, don't forget to subscribe to not miss the next one. And please share it with two people in your network. This is how this podcast gets more visibility and can help more of us to work on international markets. See you soon!